So I'm going to begin by asking you a couple of questions here. Was the Passover to be kept on the 14th or 15th of Nisan? The Jews at the time of Jesus Christ kept it on the 15th. When we read the accounts in the New Testament, we have to ask, were there two separate groups keeping the Passover on a different day than the other? Or was it only Jesus and his disciples that kept it on the 14th? And we know that they did. We're going to talk about that and cover that. Some claim that Jesus ate the Lord's Supper. He ate the Lord's Supper, what they call the Lord's Supper, with all his disciples before his crucifixion. And he died prior to the actual Passover. Most claim that the Passover was part of that old sacrificial laws that God established at Mount Sinai, which Jesus abolished on the cross when he died. Well, what was God's original instructions given for the Passover, and why all this confusion? Brethren, it's critical that we understand in God's church what God established, what God's original instructions were for the Passover. It's critical that we understand what man changed in regards to the Passover and what Jesus Christ changed in regards to the Passover. So let's see what the scriptures have to say, because that's where we go to understand the truth. And so, first of all, what was the date for the Passover that God established? What time of year? What month? And what day was to be kept? Let's go over, if you would, where we typically go. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12, I'm going to begin in verse 1. We're going to look at the instructions given for the very first Passover here in Exodus. And we're going to find here the instructions that were given to ancient Israel. Exodus chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." So Abib or Nisan would be the beginning of a new year, which would start in the spring of the year, not in the dead of winter. So that's easily proven. I won't go into that, but we can prove that this was the springtime of the year. Verse 3, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household." So this lamb was to be set aside for a very specific purpose, for a very specific set of days, for this very special Passover, sacrifice on Passover. And it was to be set aside and chosen by a man of the household, a man of the house, and it was to be killed by that man of the house. Verse 4, it says, "If the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats." Seems like the majority of the time, we hear that it was a lamb. Maybe they took it from the goats, but most of what we read, it was taken from a sheep, or it was a lamb. Now, verse 6. "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month." The 14th day. "Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." At twilight. So the lamb was set aside from the 10th to the 14th of the same month, and it was to be killed on the 14th at twilight. Now, if you have the King James Version, it probably says at evening instead of twilight. Now, the Hebrew words or phrase used here, being harbim, in the evening or between the two evenings. That's what it means, in the evening or between the two evenings. Now, there are varying opinions of the meaning of between the evenings. This is where people kind of go sideways. But most authorities agree upon the translation or understanding, and that is, as it may be rendered, the space of time after the sun begins to decline and the entire setting of it. In other words, from sunset until dark. So this time between sunset and dark, it's a short piece of time in duration. For example, here in the 48 continuous states, 48 states, it all connect here, it takes anywhere from 70 to 100 minutes for it to get dark after sunset, complete dark after sunset. Now, the further north you go, or you are, the longer it takes for true darkness to arrive after sundown. And, of course, that's going to depend on the time of the year, of course. Therefore, if this holds true for most areas, which it does, they would have had an hour or so to prepare the lamb before it was roasted. Then God gave specific instructions what they were to do with the lamb. And basically, all they had to do before roasting it was to bleed it out and to skin it. That's all they had to do, to bleed it out and skin it. Let's read here in verse 7. This is what they were to do with it. And they shall take some of the blood, put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head, with its legs, and its entrails. Interesting. But we see the blood of the lamb was used for a very specific purpose, as they were instructed to put it on the two doorposts and the lintel. And they were to eat it that night, whenever it was done roasting. And along with the lamb, they were to eat unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They couldn't eat it raw. Now, I'm not sure why you would want to do that anyway. I know there are some cultures that still eat meat raw. And I've often wondered if maybe that was not a practice in Egypt, that they ate meat raw. But they couldn't boil it. And notice they had to roast it and eat it with the head, legs, and entrails intact. So they did not gut this animal, which to me seems a little strange, because I hunt, and when I kill an animal, I make sure I gut the animal. You know, I might keep some of the things that I take out, liver, heart, whatever, but to leave all the entrails in there. And what is interesting in the studies on this, I found that the Jews were actually gutting the lamb and taking the entrails out, washing the entrails and putting some of them back. So that's one thing that they had done differently. But anyway, we find these instructions. Let's go to 2 Chronicles, if you would. 2 Chronicles chapter 35. I'm going to start with verse 13 here in 2 Chronicles, and then I'll read some more out of the chapter. But notice this, 2 Chronicles 35:13. It says, also they roasted the Passover offerings with fire according to the ordinance, but the other holy day offerings they boiled in pots, in cauldrons, and in pans, and divided them quickly among all the lay people. But this sacrifice was to be handled differently. This Passover sacrifice was to be handled differently from all the other sacrifices. And in addition to that, there was something else about the Passover that God eventually changed. Let's look here at verse 10. Backing up to verse 10. It says, so the service was prepared, and the priests stood in their places, and the Levites in their divisions, according to the king's command. And they slaughtered the Passover offerings, and the priests sprinkled the blood with their hands, while the Levites skinned the animals. Verse 12, then they removed the burnt offerings that they might give them to the divisions of the fathers' houses of lay people to offer to the Lord, as it is written in the book of Moses, and so they did with the cattle. So when did this happen? Remember, we talked about it was the man of the house that killed the lamb. Now we see that it was priest. Well, let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 16, if you would. Deuteronomy chapter 16, I'm going to begin in verse 1. I'm going to jump around a lot here to put all the pieces together, so bear with me. I'm going to have you flipping through your Bible pages fairly quickly here. But first of all, we'll see once again that it was observed at the going down of the sun. And also, God had changed where the Passover was to be observed and who was going to be responsible for the killing of the lambs, as we just read in 2 Chronicles. So here we are, Deuteronomy 16, verse 1. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month of Abib, your God, the Lord your God, brought you out of Egypt by night. Therefore, you shall sacrifice the Passover to the Lord your God from the flock and the herd in the place where the Lord chooses to put his name, in the place where God chooses to put his name. You shall eat no unleavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it, that is, the bread of affliction. For you came out of Egypt, out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. Now I want you to note this, that this day mentioned here, the day they came out of Egypt, is tied to the days of unleavened bread. Although we eat unleavened bread on Passover as well. We do. Now some people try to tie this day to the Passover, which is incorrect. Let's continue to read here. Verse 4. And no leaven shall be seen among you in all the territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the meat which you sacrificed the first day at twilight remain overnight until morning. And here's that, this is a change here in verse 5. You may not sacrifice the Passover within any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, but at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. There you shall sacrifice the Passover, once again, at twilight, at the going down of the sun, at that time that you came out of Egypt. And you shall roast and eat it in the place where the Lord your God chooses, in the morning, and in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a sacred assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work on it. So why did God change the killing of the Passover from the man of the family to the responsibility of the priests at the tabernacle or at the temple in Jerusalem? Well, we're not told why exactly. It could have been possible. It could have been because the family wasn't doing it properly. It could have been the problem. Or God wanted it done where he would be at the tabernacle or at the temple and have the priests take care of it. We're not sure, but we just see that it was changed. Now, some will interpret a couple of these verses here in this chapter to prove that the Israelites came out of Egypt on the evening of the 14th. But that's incorrect. So how do we know this? All right, I'm going to take you back to Exodus chapter 12 now. Exodus chapter 12, and I'm going to start in verse 21. Maybe I should ask you to keep some kind of a marker in Exodus chapter 12. We're going to go back and forth. But Exodus chapter 12 and verse 21. Then Moses called for the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourself according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. And then verse 22, here in the same chapter, and you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that's in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that's in the basin. And notice this, and none of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning. Those are pretty clear instructions. You cannot leave your house, go to your house until the morning. And then verse 29, and it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of his livestock. I find it interesting that we have in the past talked about a death angel passed over. Well, it really doesn't say that. It says that the Lord struck all the firstborn. Now, was it he that did it, or did he have what he called the destroyer? Was that an angel that did it? Now, so if we were to estimate that they killed the lambs, say, around 6 p.m. at sunset, and it would take about an hour or so to kill the animal and to skin it, it would take anywhere from 4 to 5 hours to roast this animal, this lamb. Then we could surmise that they were probably eating the meal fairly close to midnight, around the same time that God was striking the Egyptian firstborn males. That's just an assumption on my part, but it seems like the timing works out pretty close. Well, let's continue on here. Verse 30. So what we're talking about now is when they actually left Egypt. When was it? Says here, verse 30, so Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And then he called for Moses, so Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron by night. And he said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you said, also take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone and bless me also. So now it is morning. Remember, they couldn't leave their homes until morning because they had to stay in their houses. Therefore, it's the daylight portion of the 14th. It's the daylight portion of the 14th. So what did the Israelites do? Verse 35. Let's drop down to verse 35 here. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. So when did this take place? When did this take place? Well, it would have taken time for Moses and the leaders of each tribe to gather all the people together, to gather them together, their possessions, and plunder the Egyptians, and prepare to leave. Now, the land of Goshen itself is about 300 square miles. So it's fairly close to 15 miles by 20 miles, maybe a little larger. And the city of Ramses, where the Egyptians live, was close proximity to Goshen. And we read here that Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron that night. Now, he doesn't say if he sent a messenger in a chariot and rode out and gave Moses the message, or if he brought Moses to the palace. It doesn't say either way, but either way, it would have taken time to get the message for them and for Moses to get the message out to all the leaders of the tribes of Israel. We're also told in some of the verses in this chapter, we're told that there were approximately 600,000 men, not counting women and children, and others with them, including their livestock and all their possessions that they took. It's speculated that the population at that time of the Israelites was between 2 and 3 million people, and that could well be. But they all gathered together. They left Goshen, wherever they lived, some on the far outskirts and some close to Ramses. But they gathered together that morning of the 14th, and they headed to Ramses. Let's go to Numbers chapter 33. Let's take a look at that. Numbers chapter 33, I'm going to begin in verse 1. Let's note what it says here. It says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel, who went out of the land of Egypt by the armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are the journeys according to their starting points. It's interesting that God had Moses record their starting points. Why would that be? Well, when God took them out, remember they were headed to the land of Canaan, the land of promise. God took them the opposite way of that route. He took them the opposite way. Why was that? Well, I would assume because he wanted to test their faith. He wanted to test their faith to see if they would have faith that he would take care of them and take them to the promised land and take them across that Red Sea. So Moses recorded all these different starting points here. Verse 3 here in this Numbers 33. And they departed from Ramses in the first month. When? On the 15th day of the first month, the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians. For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, which the Lord had killed among them. Also on their gods, the Lord had executed judgments. Now let's go back once again. Hopefully you kept your place in Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12, I'm going to begin in verse 41. So like I said, it would have taken them all day during the daylight portion of the 14th to gather all the people, travel to Ramses, plunder the Egyptians, and head out. And we just read that the Egyptians were still burying their dead, and they watched them leave. They watched them leave, so it was still daylight. But now the sun is starting to set. It's starting to get dark. Verse 41 here, Exodus 12, 41. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night, note that, it is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. So this night would have been the beginning then of the 15th. And this is the night that we observe in God's church as a night to be much remembered or a night to be much observed. Well, this is the first holy day. This is a holy day. The first day of unleavened bread. And we have a holy convocation during the daylight portion of the 15th. And we eat unleavened bread for 7 days, and we have a holy convocation on the last day of unleavened bread. So, brethren, we do not observe the Passover on the 15th, but rather at the beginning of the 14th, at sunset, as God originally commanded. Now, let me touch on this. According to God's instructions, not just anyone could observe the Passover. Let's continue here in verse 43. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. No foreigner shall eat it. But every man's servant who is bought for money, when you have circumcised him, then he may eat it. A sojourner and a hired servant shall not eat it. In one house it shall be eaten. You shall not carry any of the flesh outside the house, nor shall you break one of its bones. Now, there's symbolism in that. We know that. We'll talk about that another time. All the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And when a stranger dwells with you and wants to keep the Passover to the Lord, let all of his males be circumcised. And then let him come near and keep it, and he shall be as a native of the land. For no uncircumcised person shall eat it. One law shall be for the native born and for the stranger who dwells among you. Thus all the children of Israel did as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. So this is why we only allow baptized members to take the bread and the wine on Passover. One must be baptized, have received God's Holy Spirit, and a member of the body of Christ to partake of the Passover. Because one needs to understand exactly what the Passover means and what they're doing. And so people might question, why don't you let just anyone take the Passover? Now, we'll allow someone to come in and observe. We will do that, but not partake of the Passover. Now, in addition to these instructions, if someone were to become unclean, they couldn't keep the Passover. For example, if someone were to touch a corpse, that individual had to be put out of the camp, away from everyone, for an extended period of time. So if this happened, what would this individual or individuals do if it occurred close to the Passover? Well, a decision had to be made, because it did happen. And so Moses had to take this problem to God for a solution. Let's go to Numbers chapter 9. Let's go to Numbers chapter 9. We'll begin at verse 1. Let's take a look at that. Once again, this is something that God's going to change in regards to the Passover. But this is only a change. This is a change that only God can make. Numbers 9, verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, let the children of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. On the 14th day of this month, at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all its rites and ceremonies, you shall keep it. So Moses told the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at twilight in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So the children of Israel did. So once again, the 14th at twilight. It's not in question, is it? Verse 6. Now there were certain men who were defiled by a human corpse, so that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and Aaron that day. And those men said to him, we became defiled by a human corpse. Why are we kept from presenting the offering of the Lord at its appointed time among the children of Israel? And Moses said to them, stand still, that I may hear what the Lord God will command concerning you. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, if any one of you or your posterity is unclean because of a corpse or is far away on a journey, he may keep the Lord's Passover. He may still keep the Lord's Passover. Notice this. When was that going to be? On the 14th day of the second month at twilight, they may keep it. So on the 14th day, the second month, and they shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall leave none of it until morning, nor break one of its bones. According to all the ordinances of the Passover, they shall keep it. But the man who is clean, note this, but the man who is clean and not on a journey and ceases to keep the Passover, that same person shall be cut off from among his people because he did not bring the offering of the Lord at his appointed time. That man shall bear his sin. So we see then that God made an exception for those individuals and others if this were to happen. But take note, like I said, it was still on the 14th of twilight, and included the same instructions as the first Passover. So it's just a month later. What is also very important that we take note of is what we read in verse 13, and that is that if an individual did not have a legitimate excuse for keeping the Passover, that would be a sin to that individual. So, brother, I think it's fairly clear that the scriptures show us what day and time of day that God established for the Passover, what type of animal was to be sacrificed, how that animal was to be prepared and cooked, and what was to be done with the leftovers that were not eaten. We also read that God changed the location and who was to kill and skin the animals. And also we've seen that if a person had a valid reason for not being able to take the Passover, then God established the second Passover. And taking of the second Passover is something that some of us have had to do, you know, for legitimate reasons. The next question I want to address is this. Did the Israelites really understand the full significance of the Passover? Did they understand that the lamb was a sin offering? And the blood of the lamb on the side post and lintel represented a passing over their sins and transgressions? Once again, we're going to go back to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12. I'm going to begin in verse 13 this time. Because here's what they understood. Let's read what they understood. Here's what they were told and what they were to tell their children in regards to this blood, in regards to the Passover. Exodus 12, verse 13. It says, "Now the blood shall be a sign for you." It's a sign for you on the houses where you are. "And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." So that blood was a sign to God that he was to pass over that home and spare them. Verse 23, dropping down to verse 23, "For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and the two doorpost, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever." So it was an ordinance. We'll talk about that in a minute. "And it shall come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service. And it shall be when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service? You know, Mom and Dad, why are we keeping this service? Why do we kill this little lamb? Why do we put blood on our lintels, our doorposts? Why do we do this?' That you shall say, 'It is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord.'" So there's a lot of meaning into that saying right there, which they didn't totally understand. But it says, "Who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households." So the people bowed their heads and they worshiped. So the answer to that question that I posed would be that the Israelites did not understand the true meaning of the Passover as we do today. And of course they wouldn't have, because they didn't understand that it pointed to the Messiah, that it all pointed to the death and crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Another very important point we need to be aware of while we're here in Exodus is this. The Passover and days of unleavened bread were instituted by God as an ordinance and a memorial to be kept forever before God ordained these, before the sacrificial system was established at Mount Sinai. Now, an ordinance in verse 24 has the same meaning as a commandment or a statute or a law. Look at verse 14. I skipped over it. Here in verse 14, God is talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread now. Let's take a note of that. Verse 14. So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. Whoever eats unleavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So like I said, the Passover and days of unleavened bread were established long before Mount Sinai. Now we realize that Israel was not faithful in obeying God and observing the Passover and holy days or Sabbath as they should have. We know that they had actually corrupted the sacrifices and what they sacrificed. But because of this and idol worship and other sins, God sent them into captivity. We know the history. But after 70 years of being in captivity, a remnant returned to Jerusalem and rebuilt the city and the temple. Let's go to Ezra, if you would. Let's go to Ezra chapter 6. I'm going to begin in verse 15. But I want you to be aware of what took place when they came back. When they came back to Jerusalem, rebuilt the city and the temple as best they could. Ezra chapter 6, beginning verse 15. Now the temple was finished on the third day of the month of Adar, which is in the sixth year of the reign of King Darius. Then the children of Israel, the priests and the Levites, and the rest of the descendants of the captivity, celebrated the dedication of the house of God with joy. And they offered sacrifices at the dedication of the house of God, 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and as a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they assigned the priests to their divisions and the Levites to their divisions over the service of God in Jerusalem, as it's written in the book of Moses. And the descendants of the captivity kept the Passover on what day? On the 14th day of the first month. For the priests and Levites had purified themselves. All of them were ritually clean. And they slaughtered the Passover lambs for all the descendants of the captivity, for the brethren, the priests, and for themselves. Then the children of Israel who had returned from captivity ate together with all who had separated themselves from the filth of the nations of the land, in order to seek the Lord God of Israel. And verse 22, and they kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord made them joyful and turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. So the point I want to make here is at the time of Ezra, they were keeping the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and they were two separate memorials, if you will. Two separate memorials or two separate ordinances. But from the time of Ezra until Jesus Christ's time, they had changed that. The two were combined. And the date for the Passover had changed. And how did that change come about? How did that change come about and when? Well, there's differing opinions on that. Believe me, a lot of different opinions on that. Most commentaries, most information that I found state that it was a calendar issue or a beginning of a day change associated with a pagan calendar based upon solar calculations and not lunar. Here's a quote from one article I read on the subject. I'd like to read this for you. In April 1963, the Good News explained that the change may have occurred when the Palestinian Jews were under the control of the Egyptians from 301 to 198 BC. Would not have been the Palestinian Jews, it would have been the Palestine Jews. Excuse me. This would fit into the time frame because we know it had to happen between the time of Ezra, which I mentioned, when they were keeping the right day, and the time of Christ, when there was confusion over which day was the Passover. So here's a quote from that Good News. While the Egyptians allowed the Jews to retain their ancient calendar, there was a change made in the beginning of the day. It became common to begin the day at sunrise. This custom was adopted and persisted among the Jews, even down to the New Testament times. So there's an article, if you want to research and find this article. It's in the Jewish Quarterly Review in April 1946. There's an article titled, The Beginning of the Jewish Day. Now, if you go there, you'll find the article, but they'll let you read the first page. You have to buy the rest of it. So they suck you in. So you have to buy the rest of it. This one's not too expensive, but this one is. The proof of this is also given in the Expository Times, June 1948, an article titled, Unsolved New Testament Problems, The Jewish Background of the Teaching of Jesus. So that article, if you want to buy it, I think it's around $12. The one before, I think it was $5. So it's up to you. If you didn't write down, you can call me. I'll give you these titles, these articles, and you can research it if you want. But continuing on here with this quote, with the 14th of Nisan supposedly beginning at sunrise, that puts what God calls the evening of Nisan 15th as still beginning on Nisan 14th. This is where the problem arises. Even later on, when the Jews finally got back to an evening-to-evening reckoning for the day, they refused to abandon what had become the traditional way observing the Passover. End of quote. What, the Jews were stubborn? Oh, that's a surprise, huh? How stubborn were they in a lot of things and traditions they kept? So, is this the case? Is this what happened? Could be. But now we're going to leap forward in time, and we're going to take a look at a few of the details surrounding the Passover that Jesus kept with his disciples. So we're going to go to Matthew chapter 26. So I'm going to look at the references in each of the gospel accounts, take a look at them, what's said. So the first thing we're going to look at, as I mentioned originally, the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread were separate. And I don't want to call the Passover a feast because it's not a feast. The Passover is not a feast. It's a memorial. But the Days of Unleavened Bread are called a feast, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But the Jewish leaders at the time of Christ had combined them, or they called them the same thing. Matthew 26, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these things, he said to his disciples, he says, you know that after 2 days is the Passover and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified. Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and they plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. But they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. Well, you might think, well, they're talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But they're not, because if you go through all the gospel accounts, you'll find out exactly when all this is taking place. All right, let's go drop down to verse 17 here in Matthew. Matthew 17. Now, on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying to him, where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover? Well, that's a little confusing, isn't it? On the first day of Unleavened Bread, you want us to prepare the Passover? Well, something's not quite right here. And then in verse 18, He says, go into the city to a certain man and say to him, the teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. And when evening had come, he sat down with the 12. Now, if you notice in verse 17, the words day of the feast are in italics. You note that? So they've been added. They've been added. So the actual Greek rendering here is on the first of the unleavened. The first of the unleavened. And the reason it's translated that way is because Passover, we eat unleavened. So Passover is the first of unleavened, continuing on with the days of unleavened bread. All right, let's go to Mark now. Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14, verse 12. Like I said, I'm going to go through each of the accounts here. It reads, now on the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, where do you want us to go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? Then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. Once again, a little confusing. And he sent Peter and John saying, go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I went into Luke here. Luke chapter 22. Sorry about that. I only wanted to read one verse in Mark 14, which was verse 12. Go to Luke 22, verse 7. Luke 22, verse 7 and 8. That's where these verses are that I just read. You got to pay attention to your notes. Luke 22, verse 7. Then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John saying, go and prepare the Passover for us that we may eat. All right. Now let's go to John. John chapter 6. John chapter 6. You know, John doesn't record a lot of the same things that the other gospel writers record in regards to the Passover. One thing that he does record that the other ones don't, and that is the foot washing ceremony. Interesting. Anyway, John 6, verse 1. After these things, Jesus went out to the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Then a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs and he performed on those who were diseased. And he went up on the mountain, and he sat with his disciples. And it says, now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. So you see how they kind of combine it here. It's called the Passover, but then the feast of the Jews. And then John 13, if you would. John chapter 13, verse 1. It reads, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended here, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. And Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things to his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, he rose from supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. So we'll stop right there. So what do we see in these scriptures that we just read? Well, as I've been saying, we see that they had included the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread together. They had been combined. And we also see here that the disciples came to Jesus and asked him, Where do you want us to prepare the Passover for you? And so Jesus sent Peter and John to prepare it for them. They killed and prepared the lamb. Or did they? Now, it was going to be a meal. It was going to be a meal as it always had been. Still a meal, as it was established back in Exodus. But which day did they keep it? They would have kept it on the 14th of the first month, It would have been the beginning of the 14th. It was still dark. Read the gospel accounts. When the Passover meal was ended, Jesus and his disciples went out to the garden area, right? It was still dark. John chapter 18. So they would have kept it at that time between sunset and dark. And we're going to come back to that question about, did they kill it? We'll come back to that. So when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, they came there. It's still dark, and so they had to come there with lanterns and torches and weapons. So it's still the daylight portion of the 14th. Now, this is something that we should consider. We know that Jesus Christ never sinned. He was the perfect sacrifice. He never broke God's commandments. He couldn't have. Therefore, I think it would be safe to say that he would have kept the Passover on the day that God commanded it, which would have been the 14th and not the 15th. Now, I don't have time to go through the sequence of events from the time he was arrested up until he was crucified, but everything that took place after he was arrested happened during the night and the daylight portion of the 14th. All right, let's go to John chapter 19 now. John chapter 19, and I'm going to begin verse 12. So Jesus has been arrested. He's been tried. He's brought before Pilate here in John chapter 19, verse 12. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you let this man go, you're not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that's called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was a preparation day of the Passover, about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." So note that. It's the preparation day for their Passover. But they cried out, "Away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" And the chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So we know from the gospel accounts that Jesus Christ was crucified somewhere around 9 o'clock in the daylight portion of the 14th. We know he died around 3 p.m. that same day. We know that he didn't hang on the cross very long. Why was that? Well, because of his horrible scourging that he took from the Roman soldiers, and also because of that spear that was thrust into his side and that he bled out. Matter of fact, tells us that Pilate was surprised that he died so quickly. But what were the Jews doing during this time? What were they doing? John 19 is verse 31 here. Therefore, because it was the preparation day, once again, that the body should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. So it's a high day. It's not your typical weekly Sabbath. It's a high day. And the Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken, that they might be taken away. So they were preparing for the Passover and the holy day, the first day of unleavened bread. What they were preparing for. All right, let's back up to John chapter 18. Just one verse here in John chapter 18, verse 28. And they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was early in the morning. But they themselves did not go up to the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, that they might eat the Passover. Note that. It's pretty clear. So remember, this took place on the daylight portion of the 14th. The Jewish leaders had not yet eaten the Passover. They were preparing for it, and they were going to eat it at the beginning of the 15th on the holy day, at the same time that we celebrate the night to be much observed. And we know that the priests were killing the lamb somewhere between 3 and 5 p.m. See, the Jews believed, some of the research that I found, they believed that actually between the evenings, this is what they believed and taught, between the evenings was actually when the sun reached its pinnacle, what they call the meridian, this highest point, and began to set. So from that time until sunset was between the evenings. And so they would start to kill the lambs somewhere around 3 to 5 p.m., maybe depends on how long it took. That was a lot of lambs. Anyway, so they were killing the lambs about the same time that Jesus Christ died on the cross. A lot of symbolism there. Now, here's the thing. Either there were priests killing lambs towards the end of the 13th, right? Between the evenings, the beginning of the 14th. And they gave them to the disciples for the Passover, to prepare for the Passover that they kept with Jesus. Or the disciples killed the lambs themselves and prepared them. There possibly might have been other families who kept the Passover on the 14th as commanded in the traditional communal way that it was kept originally and described in Exodus. Otherwise, they would have to wait until the daylight portion of the 14th to receive their lamb from the priests and eat it on the 15th. Logically, that's the only way it could happen. I think most of you have heard of Josephus, have you not? Josephus, a Jewish priest, a scholar, and a historian who wrote some valuable works on Jewish history. And he records this in the Antiquities of the Jews. And antiquities means ancient past, if you don't already know that. But this is what's recorded in Book 3, Chapter 10, Section 5. I don't know if you have the book, but this is where I located it. And he says, in the month of Nisan is the beginning of our year. On the 14th day of the lunar month, when the sun is in Aries, for in this month it was that we were delivered from bondage under the Egyptians. The law ordained that we should every year slay the sacrifice, which I told you before that we slew when we came out of Egypt, which is called the Passover. And so we do celebrate this Passover in companies, leaving nothing of what we sacrificed till the following day. And the Feast of Unleavened Bread succeeds that of the Passover and falls on the 15th of the month and continues 7 days wherein they feed on unleavened bread. So it seems that he's writing that there were those who kept it on the 14th, and then the 15th was the days of unleavened bread. Now, if you'd like more detail on how they processed the lambs, how they did it somewhat differently than what we read in Exodus, how they celebrated the Passover during the time of Jesus, go to the Jewish Encyclopedia. I went to Funk and Wagnalls Jewish Encyclopedia. Look under the topic of Passover, and you'll see how many changes they had made. You'll find it quite interesting. So, we have seen that Jesus ate a meal with his disciples. After the meal, he instituted the new Passover symbols. The unleavened bread, which represented his sacrificed body and the wine which represented his shed blood. And we're going to discuss more of those details as we approach Passover. I'm sure you'll hear more about that in other messages. But modern-day Jews keep what they call a Seder meal. A Seder meal, which actually has little or nothing to do with the Passover Jesus Christ kept with his disciples. Why is that? Because they're still celebrating liberation from Egypt. This is what they celebrate. Liberation from slavery in Egypt. They would not keep the Passover as we do. Why not? Well, because one reason they don't believe that Jesus Christ was the Messiah or the Son of God. Therefore, his sacrifice means nothing to them. Means nothing to them. But what about the eating of a meal? That comes up. Like I said, they have a Seder meal. Others have thought that maybe a meal is what we should do again. Have a meal and then keep the Passover. What about that? What about the meal? Should we keep or should we have a meal? We've covered this numerous times around Passover time. We've talked about this. Where do we go when we want to answer this question? We'll go to 1 Corinthians, right? Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 17. Paul is addressing the Corinthian church on this very subject because they're having a meal on the Passover. And he says here, beginning in verse 17, he says, "Now in giving these instructions, I do not praise you since you come together, not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all," he addresses this, "when you all come together as a church, I hear there are divisions among you, and in part I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, that those who are approved may be recognized among you. Therefore, when you come together in one place, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper." So it's not about eating a Lord's Supper. Yes, Jesus Christ did with his disciples. He did. But things changed. Notice, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper. "For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of others. One's hungry and another's drunk." This is on the Passover. "What? Do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, he took bread." So this is what Jesus Christ established and instituted for the Passover. "And when he gave thanks, he broke it and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant, my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body." So he said, it's the eating of the bread and drinking of the wine that's important, and it's to be done in a certain way. And when we come together on Passover, we're prepared. We understand what Passover means. We understand it's a memorial. It's not about a big meal. And look, because of this, because they were not keeping the Passover correctly, It was like a big meal, and people were getting drunk, and who knows what was going on. He says, for this reason, many are weak and sick among you, and many sleep. So God was not blessing this Passover for them. And he says, for if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world. Therefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. So it should be done properly and organized. And we're, you know, we wait for one another to take of the Passover symbols. But if anyone's hungry, let him eat at home, lest you come together for judgment. And the rest I will set in order when I come. So he was going to address the other problems they have when he came. So is a meal necessary? No. Why would the eating of a lamb that represented Jesus Christ be necessary? It wouldn't be. So, brethren, for review, we have seen that God required that ancient Israel celebrate the Passover as a memorial at the beginning of the 14th. We've also seen that God made provision for those who, for a valid reason, could not keep the Passover. And he did so by establishing the second Passover. We've seen that man, not God, changed the day for the Passover. We've seen that Jesus kept it on the beginning of the 14th with his disciples, and he ate a meal with them. He died on that daylight portion of the 14th, like I said, probably at the same time the priests were killing the lambs. We know that Jesus Christ was the lamb sacrificed for all mankind, and that he established the new covenant Passover symbols on that very special Passover evening, therefore negating the necessity of eating a meal. So bottom line, what's the bottom line for all of us? Of what I talked about, important and critical, yeah, it is. But here's the bottom line for us in God's church, is that as we follow Jesus Christ's example, what Jesus Christ did, that is what we do. We eat it on the 14th, as he did, the beginning of the 14th, as he did with the disciples. We eat bread and wine, as he said that we should. So we follow Jesus Christ's example. So, brethren, more to come on the subject of the Passover, maybe for myself, but there'll be others that will talk about this special evening in about what? Around 8 weeks from now, I think. So, have a great Sabbath, brethren. Like I said, it's always great to be with all of you here. And as I said to all those who are listening in on the webcast or listening, we do pray that someday we'll all be back together again and see all of you that we miss so dearly.